Chapter 2. A challenge, nothing, sir, can induce me to surrender my claim. I am sorry, Count, but in such a matter your views cannot modify mine. But allow me to point out that my seniority unquestionably gives me a prior right. Mere seniority, I assert, in an affair of this kind, cannot possibly entitle you to any prior claim whatever. Then, Captain, no alternative is left but for me to compel you to yield at the sword's point. As you please, Count, but neither sword nor pistol can force me to forego my pretensions. Here is my card. And mine. This rapid altercation was thus brought to an end by the formal interchange of the names of the disputants. On one of the cards was inscribed, Captain Hector Servadac, Staff Officer, Mustaganum. On the other was the title, Count Wasilai Timoshev, on board the schooner Abrina. It did not take long to arrange that second should be appointed, who would meet in Mustaganum at 2 o'clock that day. And the captain and the count were on the point of parting from each other with a salute of punctilious courtesy, when Timoshev, as if struck by a sudden thought, said abruptly, Perhaps it would be better, Captain, not to allow the real cause of this to transpire? Far better, replied Servadac. It is undesirable in every way for any names to be mentioned. In that case, however, continued the Count, it will be necessary to assign an ostensible pretext of some kind. Shall we allege a musical dispute? A contention in which I feel bound to defend Wagner, while you are the zealous champion of Rossini? I am quite content, answered Servadac, with a smile, and with another low bow they parted. The scene, as here depicted, took place upon the extremity of a little cape on the Algerian coast, between Mustaganum and Tines, about 2 miles from the mouth of the Shelif. The headland rose more than 60 feet above the sea level, and the azure waters of the Mediterranean, as they softly kissed the strand, were tinged with the reddish hue of the ferriferous rocks that formed its base. It was the 31st of December. The noontide sun, which usually illuminated the various projections of the coast with a dazzling brightness, was hidden by a dense mass of cloud, and the fog, which for some unaccountable cause, had hung for the last 2 months over nearly every region in the world, causing serious interruption to traffic between continent and continent, spread its dreary veil across land and sea. After taking leave of the staff officer, Count Wasilai Timoshev wended his way down to a small creek, and took his seat in the stern of a light four-oar that had been awaiting his return. This was immediately pushed off from shore, and was soon alongside a pleasure yacht that was lying to, not many cable lengths away. At a sign from Servadac, an orderly, who had been standing at a respectful distance, led forward a magnificent Arabian horse. The captain vaulted into the saddle, and followed by his attendant, well mounted as himself, started off towards Mustaganum. It was 12:30 when the two riders crossed the bridge that had been recently erected over the Shelif, and a quarter of an hour later their steeds, flecked with foam, dashed through the Mascara Gate, which was one of 5 entrances opened in the embattled wall that encircled the town. At that date, Mustaganum contained about 15,000 inhabitants, 3,000 of whom were French. Besides being one of the principal district towns of the province of Oran, it was also a military station. Mustaganum rejoiced in a well-sheltered harbor, which enabled her to utilize all the rich products of the Mina and the Lower Shelif. It was the existence of so good a harbor amidst the exposed cliffs of this coast that had induced the owner of the Dobryna to winter in these parts, and for 2 months the Russian standard had been seen floating from her yard, whilst on her masthead was hoisted the pennant of the French Yacht Club, with the distinctive letters M.C. W. T., the initials of Count Timoshev. Having entered the town, Captain Servadac made his way towards Matmore, the military quarter, and was not long in finding 2 friends on whom he might rely, a major of the 2nd Fusiliers, and a captain of the 8th Artillery. The two officers listened gravely enough to Servadac's request that they would act as his seconds in an affair of honor, but could not resist a smile on hearing that the dispute between them and the Count had originated in a musical discussion. Surely, they suggested, the matter might be easily arranged. A few slight concessions on either side, and all might be amicably adjusted. But no representations on their part were of any avail. Hector Servadac was inflexible. No concession is possible, he replied, resolutely. Osanai has been deeply injured, and I cannot suffer the injury to be unavenged. Wagner is a fool. I shall keep my word. I am quite firm. Be it so, then, replied one of the officers. And after all, you know, a sword cut need not be a very serious affair. Certainly not, rejoined Servadac. And especially in my case, when I have not the slightest intention of being wounded at all. Incredulous as they naturally were as to the assigned cause of the quarrel, Servadac's friends had no alternative but to accept his explanation, and without farther parley they started for the staff office, where, at 2 o'clock precisely, they were to meet the seconds of Count Timascheff. 2 hours later they had returned. All the preliminaries had been arranged. The Count, who like many Russians abroad was an aide-de-camp of the Tsar, had of course proposed swords as the most appropriate weapons, and the duel was to take place on the following morning, the 1st of January, at 9 o'clock, upon the cliff at a spot about a mile and a half from the mouth of the Shelif. With assurance that they would not fail to keep their appointment with military punctuality, the two officers cordially wrung their friend's hand, and retired to the Zoma Café for a game at picket. Captain Servadac at once retraced his steps and left the town. For the last fortnight Servadac had not been occupying his proper lodgings in the military quarters. Having been appointed to make a local levy, he had been living in a gerby, or native hut, on the Mostaganem coast, between 4 and 5 miles from the Shelif. His orderly was his sole companion, and by any other man than the captain the enforced exile would have been esteemed little short of a severe penance. On his way to the gerby, his mental occupation was a very laborious effort to put together what he was pleased to call a rondo, upon a model of versification all but obsolete. This rondo, it is unnecessary to conceal, was to be an ode addressed to a young widow by whom he had been captivated, and whom he was anxious to marry, and the tenor of his muse was intended to prove that, when once a man has found an object in all respects worthy of his affections, he should love her in all simplicity. Whether the aphorism were universally true was not very material to the gallant captain, whose sole ambition at present was to construct a roundelay of which this should be the prevailing sentiment. He indulged the fancy that he might succeed in producing a composition which would have a fine effect here in Algeria, where poetry in that form was all but unknown. I know well enough, he said repeatedly to himself, what I want to say. I want to tell her that I love her sincerely and wish to marry her, but, confound it, the words won't rhyme. Plague on it. Does nothing rhyme with simplicity? Ah! I have it now. Lovers should, where they be, love in all simplicity. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but what next? How am I to go on? I say, Ben Zoof, he called aloud to his orderly, who was trotting silently close in his rear, did you ever compose any poetry? No, Captain, answered the man promptly. Have never made any verses, but I have seen them made fast enough at a booth during the fate of Montmartre. Can you remember them? Remember them? To be sure I can. This is the way they began. Come in. Come in. You will not repent the entrance money you have spent. The wondrous mirror in this place reveals your future sweetheart's face. Apostrophe, bosh! Cried Servadac in disgust. Your verses are detestable trash. As good as any others, Captain, squeaked through a reed pipe. Hold your tongue, man, said Servadac peremptorily. I have made another couplet. Lovers should, where they be, love in all simplicity. Lover, loving honestly, offer I myself to thee. Apostrophe, beyond this, however, the captain's poetical genius was impotent to carry him. His farther efforts were unavailing, and when at 6 o'clock he reached the Gerby, the four lines still remained the limit of his composition. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.